We had yet another barrage of news events within which many of us find really essential issues involved. They may be climate change, the death of a journalist, our president seeming to favor at least body slamming journalists who speak critically of him. And then on Friday, after suffering 2 or 3 days with a virus, I parked downtown and I walked across to Dunn Meadow to listen to the Bernie Sanders, Liz Watson campaign rally. I've been to my fair share of political rallies, and I continue just to be disappointed in them because they are so often aimed at the absolute lowest level of popular consumption of information. I was not challenged to be bigger, better, a more competent acting American citizen. I was fed, we were all fed, an unhealthy diet of fast food slogans that were no better than the current lack of debate between Braun and Donnelly as they attempt to woo voters in the U.S. Senate campaign, leading me, at least in regard to those two, to an excessive use of my mute button most evenings. I know that Liz and Bernie stand for a depth of positions and particularities beyond what was presented, every bit as much, if not more so, than what their opponents stand for. But golly gee, the gathered group on the IU campus was made up of some of the most trained, talented, hungry masses of people who desire to be educated and challenged by the time, and the time was mostly wasted with political dribble. And it will come as no surprise to you that I worry just as much about what all of us have to say about our faith and our religion as I do about politics. Churches really have become excellent communicators, website savvy and television and radio narrow in our faith and religious presentations, to the point that we forget too often that it's not what we say, but it's who we are in our most challenging moments that truly define whose we are and whether we are found credible in the eyes of those who are hungry and thirsty and naked and alone, both pragmatically and metaphorically. Our world needs fewer slogans and more practical living forth in real time what we claim to believe. And I rather believe that we should hold up saying what we believe until after we have lived forth privately and politically in real time what we most hope to be true about us. A big part of Christianity has too long been about personal salvation rather than paying attention to the larger structural and systemic aspects of personal and collective brokenness. And I dare say that it is far easier for a church, anyone's faith institution, to sell personal salvation rather than focus on how we as a nation oppress minorities, women, indigenous people, the environment. And part of the reason, I think, is because the Big C church, whether it be Orthodox, Roman Catholic, liberal, evangelical, fundamentalist Protestantism, have most often been found, we have, cozy in bed with very powerful political interests, rather than being the people of service and sacrifice that we are all called upon by God to be if we are indeed to be found faithful as men and women. In this morning's reading from the Gospel according to Mark, words in quotation marks that claim to be the words of Jesus give us some idea of what Jesus considered to be faith essential. In Mark's Jesus, he says that it is not so among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be a servant to all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Now, those of us, which is going to be about 99.7% of us, who are in majority powerful positions, if we claim to believe that we are followers of this way of Jesus, we need to make sure that we are not being served, but that indeed our lives, that they are committed to service, individually and as a church organization. Many churches like ours have really struggled with this through the years, well, heck, through the centuries. We've built edifices that suggest we are serving God. Aren't they beautiful how they're serving God, worshiping God, but they're really just, they're just beautiful buildings. And God does not really desire buildings. I don't think God desires worship, but desires any person, any organization that claims to exist for God to be in service in the ways of God. For the establishment right now, the kingdom or the kingdom of God, where all are affirmed as equals and everyone has enough of the essentials of living. The prophet Amos spoke words that he claimed were God's, saying, this is from the contemporary English version, "I, the Lord, I hate, I despise your religious celebrations and your times of worship." Ouch. This time that we share on Sunday mornings is best, I think, when we gather to dedicate ourselves to learning more of the ways of God, to deepen our relationship with each other around that which we believe, around that which we think and feel is what God would like us to dedicate our shared and personal efforts toward. This church, and most all of you, have been steadfast and dedicated, I think, in some really phenomenal ways. And I think, I believe, that those ways bring wonderment to the very essence of God, which is what I believe true worship is. Our bringing wonderment to the very being of God, being acts of dedicated service and sacrifice, that's what moves God. Because in so doing, we are deepening our relationships not only with God, if you will, but with everyone on the planet. And when we do that with each other and with God, love is expressed. Love is lived out. Love is risk. And what is God but love for all of creation? And when we develop and live forth our own love, I think the very essence of God is expanded, becomes greater still. And that is what is most enjoyed by God. God does not desire religious slogans or advertising campaigns, and probably even desires that there be a few less preachers and a lot more doers of the way of Jesus, the humble ways of Muhammad and Moses. And what is it that Micah tells us that God really desires? You know, to do love, as in to love kindness, to do mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Surely to walk humbly with God means to be patient as God is patient. There are churches, there are mosques and temples filled with preachers who have stopped being patient with diversity of thought, belief, and colors of people's skins and their naturally ordained sexualities, and are preaching that most of the world that does not conform to their way of understanding God are going straight to hell and eternal damnation. Surely to love kindness, as Micah suggests, is more than not condemning someone for being radically different, believing differently than us. Kindness, a life of kindness, is not just holding the door open for someone to enter before us. It's embracing that other as a long-lost comrade who has finally come to our home to rest and to be lifted up spiritually and physically by us. Now, I've known more than just a few people who test my patience. But more than likely, I remind myself that God has to put up with them 24/7, 365, plus eternity. So what's my doing it for 5 minutes, right, or an hour or two? It is a phenomenal spiritual discipline to welcome into our lives, our personal space, not just strangers, to love those, but to love those that we have had the integrity to make as our enemies. Loving those who are undesirable to us. That, according to Jesus, is a supreme gesture of faithfulness. That, I think, is what we claim to believe we are to be about. I've mentioned this before. Abraham Lincoln had a phenomenal practice of seeking to love those, well, to at least befriend those who found his politics and his people that he advocated for so reprehensible. His was a time of remarkable public and private anxiety, much like that we are living in today. When he became aware of someone who found him to be detestable, he would research what they enjoyed reading, and he would go out and he would buy them a book that they enjoyed, that they valued, and he would send it to them as a gift with his appreciation he would sign for their contribution to society. Lincoln was also a pragmatic, sarcastic man. He would say to his friends, "I'm trying to gift my enemies as valued Americans." He says, "If that doesn't work, I'm also praying for God to call them home." In civil war, cultural wars, which we are fighting, our neighbors, we're probably fighting our neighbors, perhaps people that we even once called our friends. Winning is not easy in real life, because in truth, we need to be friends again, or perhaps for the first time. Our faith demands it. I was listening the other day to the first African-American astronaut, Mae Carroll Jemison, as she was interviewed on NPR, and she reminded the interviewer of a very true fact about who is our neighbor. The interviewer had asked her if she was ready to go back into space, and she said, "We are in space right now. And the greatest thing that we have to learn is that we are on the same team in the same spacecraft called the planet Earth," end quote. It was somewhat fun to listen to her seek to be what I think NASA must consider to be nonpartisan. But even she eventually came around to saying that if we don't take care of spaceship Earth due to what we are doing to the environment, that the ship will simply travel on without us. Climate change is one of the most central, spiritual, practical challenges in the history of human beings. I have a tendency to think about First United Church as our space capsule. We come here to be safe, to be secure. We are loved here just as we are. We come here to be nurtured, mind, body, and soul, so that when we go out from here into our daily lives, we know that here, we can always return. Here, we can always trust. Here, we can count on each other to sustain us and to hold us. We come here to be challenged. We come here to be comforted. We come here to cry, to laugh, to be angry, to be happy as we celebrate our imperfect lives together. Church is a foundational community place, and I thank you for your presence here and how you gift this community in so many fundamental ways. Some of you cut the grass, you trim the bushes, others of you set up tables, change light bulbs. There's one out right up there to the right. Just saying, John. Others of you set up communion. Others of you do bulletin boards. Many of you are on boards and committees, God bless you, that seek to maintain our spacecraft in working order, that seeks to keep us aligned with our historic premises while plotting our way forward in an ever-changing, socially, politically, rapidly evolving world. All of you are givers, and most of you are financial contributors to this organization. I just want to thank you for all that you give. Never has the need for a progressive liberal faith space capsule been more needed than in this time in history. There have been other times, but now is a new crucial moment. And I would ask you to join me, not only in continuing to give, but perhaps giving financially for the first time, while others of us who are true pillars of this community need to challenge ourselves to secure our present as we seek to be a faith-enhancing congregation as we move into the challenging days of 2019 and 20. The group tasked with helping us to raise the funds needed to meaningfully operate this organization is sending out a letter, I think this week, when there are also pledge cards on the inside of your pews, in which you and I can use to approximate what we might give next year. For me, this is towards the end, incidentally. If you don't believe me, it's all that's left. Hang on. I invest in what I believe, and I give my money to First United not because I have to, because I don't. It's a spiritual discipline to freely invest in a group of people, us, who are struggling with me to discover what it means for us to serve and to balance off maybe some selfishness and strengthen ourselves to risk more forward action. I give because it is strengthening to me to give to an organization that believes deeply in seeking to know God intimately, which always leads us to have to reach out to be a hand of hope, a face of love, an embrace of mercy and tenderness in the broken places and lives that surround all of us. I get told repeatedly when I go out into the community that others are so glad that First United is the way that we are. I'm always kind of tickled to hear what they mean by that. But they understand us to be unique, seeking, open, welcoming, and affirming, and trying our best to be intellectually and soulfully searching to be faithful to the needs of today. Okay, we can do that. What are we required to do? Love kindness. Be merciful to yourself and others. And walk humbly to bless the world by your living. It is the desire of God for absolutely everyone.